ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो विष्णुवराय कृष्णप्रसाद भूतदेव श्रीमद्भक्तवेदान्त स्वामी नित्यानन्दने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रसादने निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्येश चरणे श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदी गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Reading from 11th Canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 17, Verse 55. Karma vir griha medhiyair ishtva mam eva bhaktiman tishted vanam vopavishet prajavan va Parivrajet Karma Birgriha Medi Ayer Ishvamam Eva Bhaktiman Tishted Vanam Vopavishet Prajavan Va Parivrajet Karma Birgriha Medi Ayer Ishvamam eva bhaktimam Tishted vanam vopavishet Prajavan va parivrajet Karma bir by activities Griha mediyayir suitable for family life Ishva worshipping Mam, me, Eva, indeed, Bhaktiman, being a devotee, Tishte, one may remain at home, Vanam, forest, Va, or Upaveshet, may enter, Prajavan, having responsible children, Va, or Parivrajet may take sannyas. Translation, a householder devotee who worships me by execution of his family duties may remain at home, go to a holy place, or if he has a responsible son, take sannyas. Wherefore, this verse describes the three alternatives for a householder. He may continue at home, or he may take vanaprastha, which involves going to a sacred place with one's wife. Or if he has a responsible son to take over his family duties, he may take sannyas, the renounced order, for a definitive solution to the problems of life. In all three ashrams, ultimate success depends on sincere surrender to the Supreme Lord. And therefore, the most important qualification one can have is Krishna consciousness. But a householder whose mind is attached to his home and who is thus disturbed by ardent desires to enjoy his money and children, who is lusty after women, who is possessed of a miserly mentality and who unintelligently thinks everything is mine and I am everything, is certainly bound in illusion. Although one may try by various analytical or psychological processes to detach the mind from illusory family attachment, one will inevitably be drawn back into the network of material attachment unless the heart is purified by Krishna consciousness. A miserable householder thinks only of his own family or community without mercy for outsiders. Being egoistic, lusty, attached, and always disturbed by ardent desires to enjoy money and children, a materialistic householder is hopelessly bound in a web of anxiety. Oh, my poor elderly parents, and my wife with a mere infant in her arms, my other young children, without me, they have absolutely no one to protect them and will suffer unbearably. How can my poor relative possibly live without me? Thus, because of his foolish mentality, a householder whose heart is overwhelmed by family attachment is never satisfied. constantly meditating on his relatives if he dies and enters into the darkness of ignorance. Andam Vishate Tama indicates that in his next life, an attached householder will certainly be degraded because of his primitive mentality of bodily attachment, which is called mudadi. In other words, after enjoying the sense gratification of considering oneself the center of everything, one enters into a lower species of life. Somehow or other, we must fix our minds on Lord Krishna and come out of the darkness of ignorance to our real life in Krishna consciousness. Thus, in the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, 11th Canto, 17th Chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Krishna's Description of the Varnashram System. Translation: a householder devotee who worships me by execution of his family duties may remain at home, go to a holy place, or if he has a responsible son, take sannyas. So, these chapters are about different processes. Uddhava wanted the truth from Krishna before Krishna departed. So Krishna spoke various topics, just as Krishna spoke to Arjuna on the battlefield. And though nothing is essential except bhakti, Krishna spoke other processes. So in Bhagavad Gita, we have the process of karma yoga, jnana yoga, and astanga yoga described, when actually Krishna says, you don't need these things. And therefore, at the end, he says, give them all up and simply do bhakti. So in spite of the fact that bhakti is the process recommended, Krishna has described these other processes in Bhagavad Gita. And similarly, in the Bhagavatam, we'll find here, Krishna also describes these other processes. So this is the description of karma yoga. Then we will see a description of jnana in the middle chapters of the 11th canto. And then we'll have a detailed description of yoga also, with all the different 23 siddhis you can get, etc., from yoga described. And of course, Krishna also describes bhakti. So in both cases, Krishna describes the main processes which are described in the Vedic literatures. But we should not think that they are all equal. Nor should we think that we should practice these, or that we should mix bhakti with these other processes, and that bhakti is caused by karma or jnana or yoga, or that it's necessary to do these along with bhakti. Because we see that bhakti is described by Krishna himself to Uddhava here as being independent of the other processes. In other words, these processes are in the gunas. So karma yoga is in tamogun and rajagun, and jnana and yoga are in sattvagun, and only bhakti is beyond the gunas. Since bhakti comes from Krishna directly, it is beyond the gunas. We cannot say the same thing about karma, jnana and yoga. Yes, ultimately Krishna directs into karma yoga to some people or jnana to other people, but still, these are indirect processes in the gunas. That is all. So we have to understand clearly the difference between these processes. And though, as I said, they're described here, the ultimate goal is to glorify bhakti. So in one sense, by describing these processes and showing their dependence on bhakti, we glorify bhakti. By showing that they are in the gunas and bhakti is beyond the gunas, we glorify bhakti. And we understand it is a superior process. So therefore we shouldn't be too confused by these different descriptions. Not only in the 11th canto we'll find this, but throughout the Bhagavatam we'll find descriptions of these different processes. So particularly in the 7th canto we'll find a description of Varnashram system there. In chapter 2, we'll find a description of yoga process, our canto 2. And in other places, we'll find jnana described also. So, in spite of that, we should not think that Krishna is encouraging us to do these processes. Why? Because if we look at the beginning of the Bhagavatam and at the end of the Bhagavatam and in the middle of the Bhagavatam, we'll find contradictory statements. So at the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, in the first canto, the whole first canto's purpose is to show that bhakti is the process and everything else is useless. So the whole first canto eventually leads up to the story of how Vedavyas wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. And why did he write Srimad Bhagavatam? Because Narada Muni came and said, everything useless. Everything you've written is useless. All the Puranas are useless. Even Mahabharata useless. And why was it useless? Because even Vedavyasa understood something is wrong. Something is incomplete here. He wrote the Puranas to complete the Vedas, but he was still incomplete. He felt dissatisfied. So Narada Muni said, you're dissatisfied because you've not told the real truth. What is the real truth? Reject everything. Just do bhakti. Just worship Krishna. That's all. Don't confuse the people. So that is the beginning of Bhagavatam. And then, of course, Vyasadeva teaches Sukadeva. Sukadeva teaches Parikshit. And then Bhagavatam begins. So that's the beginning. And then if we look at the end of Bhagavatam again, and then the conclusion is, just worship Krishna and do Krishna Sankirtan. Therefore, if we look at beginning and end, we'll see that it is worship only Krishna. And of course, Bhagavatam says at the beginning, this work rejects all cheating dharmas. Like that. So we should understand that the purpose is to glorify bhakti. And throughout the Bhagavatam, we will see various verses which will show that all other processes without bhakti are useless. If you do karma yoga, varnashram system, etc., and the purpose is to elevate yourself in the gunas of sattva gun and hopefully go to svarga loka or brahma loka, you cannot do that unless you also worship the Lord. So some bhakti is necessary in karma yoga. It is not independent of bhakti. If you reject the Lord and you offend Vishnu or Krishna, then you can't go to svarga loka. You cannot enjoy nicely in the material world. So therefore, in the karma yoga system, you have to worship Vishnu as well as devatas. Yes, you can worship other devatas, but you must also worship Vishnu and understand he's supreme. And therefore, in the sacrifices, you also have to worship Vishnu. So this means that karma yoga is dependent upon bhakti. And without it, you don't get very good effects. In the 11th canto, we learn that jnana is in sattva gun. But the purpose of jnana is to get liberation, which means beyond the gunas. But how can you use gunas to get beyond the gunas? If you practice some in sattva gun, you'll get sattva gun results. You will never get, you know, nirguna. So what is the solution to that? The solution is explained that along with jnana, you have to do a little worship of Vishnu or Krishna. And when you become purified and come to the top of sattva gun, you have to reject the process of jnana because it's sattva gun and it will bind you in the gunas. And if you want to get liberation, which is nirguna, you have to reject sattva gun. But you do not reject the bhakti because it is nirguna. So it is that bhakti which gives you the liberation. In other words, liberation is also dependent upon the mercy of the Lord, not upon jnana. Jnana can only raise you in sattva guna. That's all. It cannot give you liberation. If you come to the nirguna platform, you need the mercy of the Lord. So that's available in bhakti. So even in jnana, you have to worship the Lord, a little degree at least, to respect the Lord. So that is why it is said that a person who does not respect the Lord, worship the Lord's lotus feet, falls from his position of jnana. So a real jnani will also worship the Lord. It is not bhakti because his main interest is liberation and his main process is jnana, study of Vedanta. But he must also respect the Lord and do some worship. So, liberation, the result of, or the goal of jnana, is dependent upon bhakti. And the same with yoga. If we look carefully in the Yoga Sutras, we will see there that one should worship Ishvara. And by the mercy of Ishvara, then you get liberation. So, that of course takes the form of Paramatma. So the yogi must also worship Paramatma. And in the second canto, we see there are two descriptions of the worship performed by the yogi. One is worship the Vishwarupa, the universal form. That is for less advanced yogis. More advanced yogis meditate upon the form of Paramatma. The yogis, of course, are fortunate because they meditate on the form of the Lord, but if they desire liberation, then the Lord will give them that liberation. And without that, it is difficult to get liberation. So, therefore, yoga is dependent upon Supreme Lord and Bhakti also. So these other processes are not independent. Bhakti does not depend upon karma, jnana, or yoga. Without them, one can do bhakti perfectly. So that is why it is said, even if one rejects chakra svadharmam, one rejects svadharma, varnashram system, and one only practices bhakti. And even if one does not get perfection, still, there is no sin incurred by rejecting all those things in the varnashram system and simply doing bhakti. No sin is incurred. On the other hand, someone who practices all of his varnashramic duties but doesn't do bhakti is useless. So bhakti is not dependent on varnashram. Varnashram is dependent on bhakti. And the same goes with jnana. We do not have to have jnana to do bhakti. We do not have to have yoga to do bhakti. It operates independently. They do not cause bhakti. They may be somewhat favorable. Favorable elements. But they may be rejected or done. They can be done to some degree. That is why we'll see in the definition of bhakti on the Abhilasha Shunya. Jnana karma janavratam. Bhakti should not be covered by jnana, karma, etc. It doesn't say sunya, but it says not covered by or not obstructed by. So if jnana and karma do not obstruct bhakti, they may be done. What does obstruction mean? Obstruction means unfavorable elements. So favorable elements of karma and jnana could be done. What are favorable elements of karma? Reject the worship of the devatas in the karma yoga system. Those elements which contradict bhakti, we will reject and we will do the other things. For instance, should one do Shraddha rites for one's dead ancestors or parents, whatever, should we go through those ceremonies? So the problem with Shraddha rites is you worship pitras and devatas. So therefore we have to say, no, you can't do those rites. Or you can do the rites if you substitute worship of Vishnu for worship of pitras and devatas. Or if you offer everything to Vishnu, then you offer the prasad to the pitras and the devatas in the Shraddha rites. So in other words, they're getting Vishnu prasad. Then you can do the rites. So in other words, that becomes favorable. At the same time, we should not think that if I do not do these Shraddha rites, then I will be very sinful. If one thinks like that, then that also is an obstruction to bhakti. Because as we know, if you only do bhakti, there is no sin incurred. If we don't do anything else, only bhakti, there's no sin incurred. So that means we don't have to do pitta rites, we don't have to do other karmas, we don't have to follow the rules of varnashrama. Just do bhakti. Covers everything. So, these things may be done for various reasons. One is, of course, social duty. Everybody criticizes if you don't follow the system. so we can do it in one sense and make an appearance of following at the same time, now that we're attached to it. Just as Krishna says to Arjuna, you follow, you do according to the Varnashram system to teach other people, but be unattached to the results. So we shouldn't think it is ultimate, but one could do without attachment. Just to set an example for other people, for the people that don't have faith in bhakti. At least they should follow Varnashram. So that may be one reason for doing it. Another reason, of course, is we have a material body, and the material body needs support. In other words, food and shelter and clothing. We live in a society or in a family, so we have duties towards family members and towards society and different types of conduct. So we are forced to do something. So we can borrow the rules from Varnashram to the extent they do not interfere with bhakti. So that is what we do. We borrow the rules for the body. Because we have a body, obviously, so we have to do things. We have to eat and whatever. So we borrow the rules from Varnashram system. Rules of cleanliness. And they're all taken from the Varnashram system. Bathing, putting on clothing, whatever. Taken from the Varnashram system. Social interaction with family members. Taken from Varnashram system. How to conduct yourself in relation to others. Etiquette. Rules of etiquette. Taken from Varnashram system. So we take those rules because we do have a material body and we're living in the material world. To that extent, we follow. As long as it does not contradict the rules of bhakti. Where it contradicts, then we reject. So, in the Varnashram system, we have varnas and we have ashramas. But we know, the Lord Chaitanya says, one who knows Krishna is a devotee. And it doesn't matter what varna he's in or what ashram he's in. So bhakti disregards varna ashrama. Those are and in Lord Chaitanya, these are all external things. So though the varna ashram system is there, the devotee does not look at it in the same way that the people doing karma yoga look at it. So the devotee sees these as temporary designations only. And in fact, it is an offense to think of a Vaishnava as a Sudra or a Brahmana. Because then we're thinking the Vaishnava is in the gunas. Bhakti is in the gunas. The bhakti is beyond the gunas. So yes, devotees do have gunas in one sense, but at the same time, even the Lord says the devotee, even the sadhaka, doing sadhana, he's beyond the gunas in the sense that he just bhakti is just nirguna. That bhakti is nirguna. Of course, the devotees may have problems in the gunas, but the bhakti is nirguna. So in third canto, Kapila describes bhakti and the gunas, tamagun bhakti, rajagun bhakti, and sattvagun bhakti. But the commentary Vishwanath is, don't think bhakti is in the gunas. The bhakti is coming from Krishna, can never be in the gunas. But people are in the gunas, that's all. So, same with the name. The name is beyond the gunas, but if we are in the gunas, then we do namabhas instead of pseudonam. If we have ignorance or whatever, then the name looks like it is covered. The name isn't covered, but we are covered, so therefore the effect of the name is less. So bhakti is always bhakti, but because of the interference of our anarthas, then it may appear this way or that way. So, if a person takes to the process of bhakti, that bhakti is nirguna, but it may be look like it is in the gunas because the person has different modes or whatever. But we should never, it is no offense to say this is a Sudra Vaishnava or a Vaishnava Vaishnava or a Kshatriya Vaishnava or a Brahmana Vaishnava, because then we begin to label bhakti itself. So, we should think of that person in terms of his devotion. So we can think of a devotee as a Kanishtha devotee, a Madhyam devotee, or Uttama devotee. Okay, that's fine. Because we know that he's advancing and his bhakti is becoming stronger. But we should not start labeling it in terms of varnas and ashramas and gunas. So we will see. Someone who is so-called Sudra or a Mlecha may be the most exalted Vaishnava. An example is Haridas Thakur, who was beyond the ashramas and varnas. But he is Namacharya. So it's beyond the goodness. But, and we cannot say, oh, he's a Malecha Vaishnava. He's beyond the goodness. So we cannot label people by according to birth or whatever and give them different varnas like that. Or ashrama. But we find that many of our acharyas were grihastas. A lot of Chaitanya's associates were all grihastas. Most of them were grihastas. Very few sannyasis. We cannot criticize a person simply because of ashram and say that the sannyasi is superior to the grihasta or whatever, like that. That's as far as bhakti is concerned. Bhakti is beyond all limitations of gunas or whatever. So here we find there in the Bhagavatam, in spite of the fact that Narada said, okay, you show bhakti as supreme. But then, again, we find all the descriptions of karma yoga, jnana yoga, astanga yoga all mixed in here. So we should not be disturbed by that. One is because this is a process by which Sukadev Goswami attracts other people who were also listening when he was speaking to Parikshit. So there were all sorts of sages there. That somehow he wants to attract everybody, make them listen. So he puts all these little subjects there so they will also become attracted to listening. Another is he likes to hide bhakti because bhakti requires some qualification. So bhakti is guhyatamama. It is the highest secret. Rajaguhya, the king of secrets, is rahasya, the great secret. So it's not available to everybody. It is for qualified people. Just as they say the Vedas, that we shouldn't give it to the sudras because they're not qualified. So everything has a qualification. So bhakti also has qualification. Qualification of bhakti is not according to varna or gunas, it's according to faith. So, still, bhakti is a little hidden. So therefore these other things are put there for people without faith, so they can see these other things, jnana or karma or yoga, instead of bhakti. Same in Bhagavad Gita. So the devotees will understand the truth by looking carefully at the beginning and the end and the middle and seeing all the verses and seeing the positions of bhakti, karma, jnana, and yoga. They'll see that bhakti is the process, only recommended process. Still, for other people who don't have faith, they can become attracted to all these other things, and bhakti is hidden from them. So therefore these other things are mentioned in the Bhagavatam. So we should not think that bhakti is dependent on these other processes. They may be done, but always secondarily. They are not a cause of bhakti. Bhakti is caused only by bhakti. It is not caused by gunas. Okay, so here we have a description of the varnashram system, which is part of karma yoga. So, very methodically, Krishna describes each of the varnas and each of the ashramas. So here he's describing the ashramas, the household of ashram. Then he'll describe the grihasta, or the grihasta ashram. Here he's described the brahmacharya ashram, he'll describe the vanaprastha ashram, and then the sannyas ashram. So he describes all these ashramas in these verses here. And he describes the varnas also. So he gives a little description. And for expansion of this, we'll find in the Smriti Shastras, like Manusmriti and other Smriti Shastras, we'll find more details of all these different ashramas and varnas and their duties or whatever. So here's a summary is given of the different rules and regulations for the different groups. So here it describes that the householder should, he can remain in his house, renounce and become a vanaprastha, or he can become a sannyasi. He has three choices. And it's preferable that he at least goes to the forest. And if he's very qualified, he can take sannyas. And then the next verses that I read describe that if he stays in the house and he remains attached, then he's a complete failure. So the whole process of the varnas and the ashramas is to raise people up to become detached from the material world. So if you're in tamagun, you're very attached and hopeless, basically. If you're in rajagun, you're very attached also, but you're a little more intelligent, so you work very hard. And if you're in sattvagun, then you become detached. The quality of sattvagun is, one is prakash, which means knowledge. That means not material knowledge, but we understand I'm not the material body anymore. And the other is contentment, some sort of happiness, but not material happiness. We are content without material things. That means we're detached from material enjoyment. So these are the qualities of sattva-gun: detachment from material enjoyment, knowledge, spiritual knowledge. At least we understand that this means atma and body. So the whole process of varnas is gradually to get you up there to the top of the gunas, from tamagun to rajagun, by following your duties as a sudra, a vaishya, a kshatriya, and a brahman. And as you go up through the gunas, you get more opportunity for detachment. So therefore the sudra has only one ashrama, grihastha ashram. He doesn't have a brahmachari ashram, doesn't have a vanaprastha ashram or sannyas ashram. He's not qualified. So vaishya can have be a brahmachari and a grihastha. And a kshatriya can be a brahmachari, grihastha, and a vanaprastha. And a brahmana is a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi. So the upper class gets some Vedic training, the brahmacharis at least. And we'll see the vanaprasthas, they don't take sannyas, the kshatriyas do not take sannyas, they go to the forest. We'll see the pandavas, they went to the forest, they went up in the Himalayas, they didn't take sannyas, but they at least left the house. And we'll see the great kings, Bharat, left the house, became a vanaprastha. The great kings, usually they go off with their wife and they do austerities in the forest as vanaprasthas. And the Brahmins, they take sannyas. So that's all according to qualification. So that process is gradually, as I said, raise up at the gunas, and as you get the sattva gun, more detachment. So therefore the ashramas bring about gradual detachment. At the same time, we will see that what is the predominant ashram? It is grihastha ashram. Most of the brahmacharis become grihasthas. And all of the sudras become grihasthas. In fact, the sudras can't be anything else. And in the population, the sudras are the majority. Maybe 70% are sudras. 20% are vaishyas, like 5% kshatriyas and 5% brahmas, something like that. So fewer brahmanas and kshatriyas, more vaishyas, and majority of sudras. So in that system, generally the vaishyas don't renounce very much, and the kshatriyas also don't renounce, and maybe at the end of their life they become vanaprastha. So most of the people are grihasthas in the whole varnashram system. So this becomes dangerous in one sense, because grihastha life can lead to attachment, obviously. So, what is the safeguard? The safeguard, one of the safeguards, is that the grihastha ashram itself has rules and regulations to restrict enjoyment. And then, in the higher caste, we have introduction of the other ashramas, that is brahmachari ashram, so that one will have some sense of austerity and sense control as part of one's life through education before one becomes grihastha. And then if you become a Kshatriya and a Brahma, then you do your grihastha duties with the training of Brahmachari, then you renounce the household life and become a vanaprastha. And of course, if you're a Brahmana, then you can also take sannyas. So, the emphasis here is to come up to sattva-guna at the same time, gradually become detached from the material world. So when we get absolute detachment from the material world, then we get liberation. So that is why the Varnashram system is said to have artha, dharma, kama, and moksha as the goals. What about bhakti? What about prema? So Lord Chaitanya says the actual goal of human life is prema, none of these things. So that is why he rejects Varnashram system, because prema is not there. It is only raising you out of the gunas. That's its main goal. Get you out of the gunas eventually. So, this process is, it's quite methodical in what it's doing. And gradually detaching from the material world, from the position of ignorance in Tamaguna, the sudras. By following those rules, gradually, birth after birth after birth after birth, they gradually rise up in consciousness. So the system of evolving consciousness for the human beings. That's what the Varnashram system is. Very good system to do that. But it takes implementation of the rules, so you have to have the kshatriya there to implement the whole system on the people. Brahmins cannot implement anything. Kshatriya has to be there to implement all the rules. And who's going to be the kshatriya? Very difficult. Therefore the Lord himself put the manus there to start the lines of kings. And he empowers them to implement dharma in the material world. So the Lord says, I come and I restore dharma. So in other words, he puts the kings there. He supplies the kings. He supplies the manus, who supplies the dynasty of kings to put the system in place. Because normal people cannot put it in place. So this is how it operates. Unfortunately, it then tends to disintegrate as Kali Yuga progresses. So that is why not practical in this age. So the alternative is simply do bhakti. So instead of gradual system of going through karma and going to jnana and then yoga and then bhakti, recommendation of Narada Muni is just to encourage everybody to do bhakti yoga and Kali Yuga as the main process. And other things do secondarily if you want to do. So that is the method he's given. Okay. Any questions? Yeah, so the jnani, as for his bhakti, he must worship or recognize Vishnu and do some small amount of worship as a secondary anga of jnana. As we know, even the Mayavadis, Shankara's followers, they also worship they worship Krishna and the Devatas and whatever. He's even written stotra to Krishna and whatever. But then he also worships Devatas, whatever. And ultimately says they're all Maya. So if you worship, then you say it's all Maya, that is offensive. So therefore you cannot get liberation if you do that system. If you worship a little bit but you do not say it's Maya, then that's the system by which you can get liberation. So technically the Mayavadi cannot get liberation. If they also worship Vishnu as an anga of their sadhana.
And they also go through the process of
Yeah, well, the main process is study Vedanta. Yeah. But mainly Vedanta. Huh? Logic and Vedanta. That's their main thing. Which is, and then they, Upanishads. Meditate on Brahman. Aham Brahmasmi, etc. Conclusion of Upanishads. And, secondarily, then they will do some worship, including worship of Vishnu. And if they don't do that, no liberation. They may think they're liberated, but then they can I get liberation? Well, Bhagavatam says, to the extent that one is attached to those duties, one can do those duties. But then it may not be pure bhakti. It can be karma misra bhakti, whatever. So the level of sudha bhakti means we have strong faith so that we have no attachment to these other things. So one can do various mixtures. One can do karma with a little bhakti, in which we call it karma yoga. We can karma yoga without bhakti, in which you get zero result. And when you start increasing the bhakti, and it becomes more bhakti than karma, then we can call it karma misra bhakti. And then if that gets less and less and less, and finally disappears, we get pure bhakti. So there's various degrees you could follow in that system of mixing it in various amounts. But preferable is sudha bhakti, without the mixture at all. And one could do this, the duties with zero attachment. This is that example for others. Then it's still considered pure bhakti.
Bhakti is higher than mukti.
Huh?
Bhakti is higher than mukti.
Oh, wow. Did you pass your examination for initiation? He says, is mukti higher or bhakti higher? So mukti is impersonal liberation. Bhakti leads to realization of Bhagavan, which is much higher. The bliss one can get from mukti is like a drop of water in the desert compared to the ocean of rasa and bhakti. So it is much inferior. Oh yeah, yeah. This is Krishna also comes to establish dharma, just as he appoints people like the Manus to establish dharma. And so Krishna also does dharma, and he also follows. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, "If I don't follow, no one will follow." So he does that to establish dharma. But at the same time, we see he also says "Sarva dharma parityaja" at the end of Bhagavad Gita, "Give up all dharmas, simply surrender unto me." He also does it as a pastime. This is the part of his lila. He acts according to dharma when he's in Dwarka and Mathura. When he's in Vrindavan, he doesn't, not so much concerned with all that. He simply plays around. He's a cowherd boy, so he doesn't really get into it too much. But in his later pastimes, then he acts as kshatriya and whatever. But that's part of his pastimes. Not that he is in the gunas or he is a kshatriya. He's beyond the gunas. So he teaches others dharma. But then at the same time, he does the opposite. He does the opposite also. So that is why the gopis are so famous, because they break all dharma. And then Krishna praises them. You are the highest. Because you've given up dharma for me. So therefore, serving Krishna as the gopis serve is higher than following dharma. That's what he's teaching there. And the one who can break dharma to serve Krishna, he's higher than the person who follows dharma. So, Krishna's also very unattached to dharma ultimately. He says, well, you serve me. Even if you break dharma, it doesn't matter. If you tell a lie, it doesn't matter.
Huh?
What dharma? Following dharma? Well, some extent, and obviously he's following some Vaishya rules in the axis of Vaishya in as a, you know, a cowherd. So they have their rules of Varna also. But it becomes much more prominent when he's actually acting as a king and he has to establish, you know, kill the demons and establish dharma. And this, you know, so he acts more according to the rules there in Dwarka and Mathura. Yeah, kshatriya. So we'll see that often the avatars are kings, because one of the purposes of the avatars is to establish dharma. But the other purpose of the avatar is to establish bhakti. Not all of them do that. Some establish jnana. The Kumaras establish jnana, or Kapila as mixed. This is dharma, jnana, yoga, bhakti, all everything. Dattatreya, basically, jnana, hamsa, jnana and bhakti. Different avatars will establish different things. And of course, Narada Muni is mainly bhakti. So according to the avatar, they will establish different things. But often, like Rama also establishes dharma, and he acts as a king to do that. So many of the avatars come as kings also. Okay. Hare Krishna.